at home. After getting your test results, you can learn more about proper self-isolation guidelines by visiting quebec.ca/self-isolating. This information is there to help protect you and everyone living under the same roof. All of us can make a difference, so let's keep making sure all of us are safe. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, also known as Chibchague and Mununyang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, February 17th, 2022. On tonight's show, my guests, actress and writer Julie Vincent, author of The Doorman of Windsor Station, now adapted into a radio play. The story is inspired by a mysterious man she met at a cafe.
We saw each other. We started a kind of relationship, and I started the kind of very human investigation with him. And 6 months later, I was pursuing his past in the city of Montevideo. That was how it started.
Dancer and choreographer Andrew Turner on 18 Practices, his exploration of Homer's Odyssey.
Dancing sort of opened up a whole layer of richness of experience that I didn't know existed when I was walking around in my head all the time. So it's great to sort of be in my body.
And French electronic music producer Molecule and his adventure to record the sounds of Greenland.
Donc c'est un peu l'art de disparaître, effectivement, de se mettre dans un état proche de la méditation, de retenir son souffle au maximum, de participer, de ne faire qu'un avec le cadre dans lequel on se trouve et être attentif aux moindres détails, travailler autour du silence.
Before we begin, some updates. Earlier this week, the province announced that the vaccine passport will eventually be phased out of use by March 14th. This means that venues will no longer request that audience members present their proof of vaccination before they enter a hall, nor do they have to have staff on hand to do those passport checks. And the culture minister, Nathalie Roy, also unveiled today a multi-million dollar plan to help relaunch the cultural sector after yet another period of closure. A few years ago, Julie Vincent was feeling rather lackluster. The actress and writer was looking to recharge, to view her city of Montreal in a new light. She sat down at a cafe on Saint-Denis Street with an idea she wanted to put on paper. At the heart of it, it would be about an architect in search of beauty. And wouldn't you know, a serendipitous twist of fate was waiting for her. A man reading in the same cafe struck up a conversation with Julie. A man from Uruguay who had come to Quebec after the coup d'etat in his country in 1973, seeking out a new chapter in Montreal. And he happened to be an architect and a self-described vagabond. This real-life relationship would provide the fodder for a play that Julie would go on to write, called Le Portier de la Gare Windsor, or The Doorman of Windsor Station. Her work on the play would bring her to Buenos Aires and Montevideo, and it was first produced in 2010 in French at Fred Barry Hall. Now, the play has been translated into English and recorded as a radio play. It's available online from now until the end of the month.
I am a testimony. As long as the witness is alive, the testimony lives on.
The Singulier Pluriel Theatre Company presents The Doorman of Windsor Station.
You're hearing a tiny preview of the podcast here.
Montreal, a few years later. Studio. Passengers have left a birdcage on a suitcase. Grignon is sitting on the floor looking at scattered photographs. Francisco is drawing. His left hand is hidden behind his back.
Why do you hide your left hand behind your back when you draw?
It's a long story.
Are you left-handed?
I was.
Grignon picks up a drawing from the floor.
Is this a child's drawing? A bull?
I did it a long time ago. In Montevideo, lots of people like my parents arrive from Europe by ship.
Has your father ever come here?
No.
You won't go back?
I can't. I'm working.
You could take time off.
I can't return there. I just can't.
A vacation might do you good.
I told you I can't.
8 months later, the studio is a mess. Brunel is questioning Francisco.
It looks like you lost your referendum.
You've come by to talk politics?
Do you have the surveying plans I asked you for?
You're seeing ghosts where there aren't any.
Ghosts?
Irregularities. You see them everywhere.
Are you still abiding by the official fee rates?
Like everybody else, something gets by me from time to time.
Where are your preliminary plans?
I spoke with Julie Vincent last week.
Bienvenue, Julie. Thank you so much for being on Upstage. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm very happy to be capable to share with you about that special event, which is our podcast. Sarah, thank you for inviting me.
Tell me about that day in Windsor Station when you made this interesting acquaintance.
Well, actually, it was not in Windsor Station that I met Francisco Antolino. You know, I live in the West Island. I live in Dorval. And I used to take the suburban train to go downtown. And I was at that time in 2005 working as an actress quite a lot, you know, working at television in a sitcom and teaching at National Theatre School and on stage too at theatre. But I felt like bored. I tell you, I felt like bored with my life, like in a vicious circle, doing always the same things. Between two activities, I've been in that cafe nearby Metro Sherbrooke. I started to write, and I wanted to write about the loss of beauty in my city. And I thought that starting with the character of a man, which could have been an architect, I thought it would have been a good idea. There was a man just in the other table nearby me in the cafe Les Gâteries. It was the name of that cafe nearby the Librairie du Square. And he was reading with dictionaries, a dictionary in Spanish, a dictionary in French, and a dictionary in German. And after a while, I was writing like that. Okay, a loss of beauty in my city, a man that can be an architect and he may destroy himself. And I asked to that man, are you a writer? He answered, no, I'm an architect, but you may see me as a vagabond, as a tramp, because he was retired and because he was never at home. And then we started to chat, and the man was born in Montevideo. And of course, we saw each other. We started a kind of relationship, and I started the kind of very human investigation with him. And 6 months later, I was pursuing his past in the city of Montevideo. That was how it started.
Listening to you tell the story, I can't help wonder if you're somebody who just naturally talks to strangers, if you're someone who is a natural observer of people, that you're the kind of person who will initiate a conversation. Obviously, with all of his books, he was an interesting figure. But are you, as a person, someone who looks out for people and looks to find stories in everyday people?
That's a nice question, Sarah. I like this question. Yes, I am. I think this is a way to be related to the others, but this faculty, this ability, truly, I lost it for several years because I was working and I was aware that I started to be like a machine, doing this and doing this and doing my sitcom. And rather, theater is very subtle and very nice practic. I was doing it as a machine. But that day, I think that I was so bored of my life that came back this need of the other. And then a diamond came. And your question remind me of those writers that I do love so much, like Julio Cortázar, by example. The writers women writers from the surrealistic movement, you know, that think that you walk in the city, you started to see it differently, and you will meet someone you didn't expect to meet, and this is poetry. In this moment, there is magic, but it's not esoterical thing. It's not that. It's poetry. I have had lost that, and going to Montevideo, discovering South America, learning history of Argentina mainly and Uruguay mainly, learning Spanish, going back, reading Cortázar, Borges, Onetti, meeting contemporary younger than me writers like Mariana Perkovic, it changed me and it gave me the privilege of being in a state of mind where, again, I was capable to expect some magic and some poetry in my life.
You're opening your eyes and being ready and available for that kind of serendipity and that kind of magic. I'm speaking with Julie Vincent, who is the writer and also in charge of artistic direction of the new podcast based upon her work, The Doorman of Windsor Station. And we're just talking about the remarkable chance encounter she had with somebody. But of course, it was a chance encounter, but you initiated this conversation, Julie. It's just such an interesting story. Tell me about the process that came to, because the play was initially presented in 2010, I believe, in French. And then you mentioned Montevideo and how you had picked up Spanish. How did you come to start developing the play to be performed in his native country or native continent?
It was a long and complicated process, but it was as always with passion, never boring. Here, we made it with Jean-François Casabonne, the father of Jean-François, was born in Liban. Francesca Barcenas, the father of Francesca, was born in Venezuela. Victor Andrés Treyes Turgeon. I started right here with people, very good actors I can find, were born in other country or in South America. We made it in Fred Barry, in Denis Peltier. It was my dream to make it in Montevideo. And there is a established theater, which is an independent theater, but established theater because it's there for a long time, which is called El Galpón. El Galpón had to be exiled during the dictature. Many of their actors died. Other, they've been in Mexico. And when came back democracy in 1985, in Montevideo, they came back and they start to innovate their theater again. They were very interested with the story of the exiled man and the fact that he met a French-Canadian woman in the play and that the story of their country may come back from Montreal, from another country. You know, this story from the exiled man came from Montreal. But after a while, they changed their mind. They told me, no, we cannot make it here. So I had to accept that decision. It was hard for me. It was comme une peine d'amour, like a love pain.
Heartbreak.
And then heartbreak. Then I started to learn something important. And something happened that I didn't expect is in Buenos Aires, there was a woman directing a school, which was called Casa de Letras, which is a school that woman, Blanca Herrera, created. And it's a school of storytelling. She was aware and she knew about the project. And she wrote me, listen, I am interested in the story of the Doorman of Windsor Station because during those very hard days, I was sick. I was in a bed. I was really sick. My eyes were closed to that reality. And your text, your play, allow me to investigate something where I was blind in that time because I was sick. But I won't do it if you accept the way you made it. we need to make it as a story for four narrators instead of eight actors. So we start a very long process. She decided to make an adaptation of the play, and I worked with her a lot, and she translated the play. She translated in Spanish, and she decided to co-product with me with not a lot of money, but she found a place. She found very good actors. And so I was in Buenos Aires, and we made it. And in Montevideo, we made it, and finally, I had 60 hours to work with very good actors. And so we made a reading with Atriles, no sé cómo, avec des lutrins. You know, when you read. Yeah, the actors were on stage, but they were reading their part. And there was musicians on stage, bandoneon and Michel Schmidt, the composer at piano, and the Teatro Victoria was full, and then it was huge success. And now we were supposed to do it in Toronto, but it didn't occur for the COVID and for everything, so we decided to make a podcast.
I'm speaking with Julie Vincent, who is the writer of The Doorman of Windsor Station, just talking about the process of how the play came to be translated into Spanish and performed in Latin South America. And Julie, you were just mentioning about, yes, what a shame it was you were expecting to have this performed in Toronto in English this year, and that's been postponed, and hopefully you'll be able to redo that another time. But however, you do have the podcast option, and I understand you did direct your actors via teleworking, via everyone's at home and you're at home directing them. What was that process like for you?
We made another one before, The Doorman of Windsor Station, which is another of my plays, Soledad o Azar, Soledad o El Azar. And we were two actresses then. So I discovered the possibility of the process doing that other play. I discovered that hearing, listening to the other, rather you're in Zoom for rehearsing for a podcast, it's not a bad process because you have to listen. The difficulty at the beginning was exactly that we sometimes we didn't listen carefully to the other. So to have the real contact coming from the sensibility, from the psychic life of the actors, from the heart of the actor, you have to listen to your partner. You have to sometimes close your eyes and listen very much to cut with the feeling of being alone, something you may know very well, Sarah.
can be lonely. Yes, you have to really use your imagination to feel like you're talking to someone, even if no one's in front of you.
Exactly. Then we worked a lot with rhythm and with music. I'm used to work with the same composer, which is Michel Schmidt, for years. I like rhythm. I write with rhythm. Instead of doing radio theater with realistic sounds, by example, the sound of a cup of coffee in a coffee, we decided with Michel Schmidt, the composer, to put music to make the audience traveling with the music. And so it was not so realistic than imaginative way of traveling from Montevideo to Montreal, and from the inner life of the character to the external life by music and rhythm. The actors were very good, very happy to work, let me tell you. Very happy to, like Marcelo Arroyo, it was a nice challenge for him because he was born in Chile. Her parent comes from Chile, and going back to the story, to his inner story, because, you know, the dictatorship occurred in 73 in Uruguay, and several months later in Chile. So the story is connected. We discovered that we can do the play with music and with rhythm. We were so happy to achieve that with the power of the music and the power of the acting, that I may tell you, Sarah, that if I would have to put it on stage, I think I will do it like that, like a concert, a chamber concert with the actor with 50 suitcases and doing it like a concert. And I think it would be great.
So this experience of the Balado, the podcast, is almost changing the way that you even conceive of stage productions and live theater.
Exactly. This is what I want to say. It changed my way to stage that play, because I always thought that it isn't an expensive play because there are 8 actors. I realized that staging The Doorman of Windsor Station with a very sober set, as I told you, 50 suitcases, the pianist, the voices of the actors in front of the audience that are there alive with us, and shooting the text, but shooting the text as if it's like, it's not slam, it's not rap, it's becoming a part of music, text and music. You know, Stravinsky spoke a lot about that. And I made Joan of Arc a long time ago with an orchestra. And then I learned that you can speak in the rhythm like do the musician. So I pretend that now we can do the show that way, and that it would be great and not so expensive.
Well, thank you so much, Julie, for coming on to tell us about The Doorman of Windsor Station. And congratulations on seeing this play, having new life breathed into it in such an accessible way that people can listen to it in the comfort of their home. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, Sarah, thank you so much to be interested and to make me capable to express myself about it, because it's with very good actors and a very great composer, Michelle Smith, and the translation of Hugh Hazelton supported us in a beautiful way. Thank you, Sarah.
That was actress and writer Julie Vincent. Her play, Le Portier de la Gare Windsor, has been translated into English by Hugh Hazelton and performed in the langue de Shakespeare as The Doorman of Windsor Station. Julie hopes it will eventually be performed in English in Toronto, as originally intended, but of course the pandemic had other plans. You can access the podcast via Facebook at the page for the theater company Singulier Pluriel, SINGULIERPLURIEL. You can also visit their website, singuliernordsudpluriel.com. The podcast is up now until the end of the month. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, a French DJ who travels to distant lands, records natural audio for weeks at a time, then transforms his work into spectacular audioscapes.
Productions Nuit d'Afrique and TD Bank Group are proud to present the new faces of Afro Jazz. A special evening of concerts offering us a musical journey to Cuba, Ivory Coast, and Guadeloupe with Deme Arocena, Donald Dogbo, and Toby Young. Broadcast live on the Nuit d'Afrique Facebook page Thursday, February 24th at 8 p.m. More info at productionsnuitdafrique.com.
Andrew Turner had a circuitous route to his career as a dancer and choreographer. For one thing, the Montreal native originally wanted to be an academic. He was studying history and philosophy before he dropped out, then took up dance as a way to recover from his academic burnout. But the hobby turned out to be his next career pivot. After graduating from Concordia's dance program with little to no experience when he entered, Andrew has since embarked on several solo shows and has recently received his master's in choreography from UCAM. He's an award-winning choreographer, and his work has been presented in the US, France, Belgium, the US, and Mexico, and of course, Canada.
Andrew's new piece reaches back to his academic roots by drawing inspiration from a recent translation of Homer's Odyssey, the first translation by a female scholar by the name of Emily Wilson. You know the tale, Odysseus goes on an epic journey, but Andrew has taken a critical eye to the story and the myth of Odysseus, as well as turning the lens on himself. He takes this heavy mythic tale and infuses it with humor and absurdity. He speaks backwards, he plays with his tongue, he spins lightsabers. This new work just opened at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine. It's called 18 Practices, named for the 18 practices he crafted from reading the Odyssey. I spoke with Andrew last week. Welcome, Andrew, to Upstage. Thanks so much for taking time to be here. This is so exciting. Venues are open again, and you're right in the mix a week later, right? How does that feel?
I feel super lucky. I was just overjoyed when they made those announcements, and I just barely made the cut. So it feels good. I'm excited to get this thing in front of an audience. I and the work itself are just so hungry to meet some people.
Absolutely. So tell me, 18 practices, how long has this been germinating for? Has that been a long process for you?
Jesus. Can I say Jesus on this?
Yes. Yes. Jesus.
Well, we did sort of a work in progress version of it back in 2018. So that was at Tangente. And there was about 40 minutes of material back then. And then, pandemic, the timelines got all skewed. I was supposed to present last April, and then that got pushed to now. So it's like there's a good 3 years there, which feels very surreal. It feels like it was yesterday, but it also feels like another lifetime.
For sure. Mostly specialize in doing solo works, right? So I imagine that maybe 3 years is on the longer end of the development process for you.
Big time.
Yeah. So how long would it normally take you to go from idea to mounting the show?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of a return to form. Like the last solo I did was just a little over 10 years ago. And so this is, my process has changed quite a bit, and I'm sort of, things are a little less immediate, and I tend to ruminate a little longer. So, I mean, yeah, I feel like 8 months would have been enough.
Yeah.
But 3 years have definitely, like, they've done a thing. And it's still, that's what's cool, is that it still does feel current. It feels true to my preoccupations now. So that's cool.
What's preoccupying you right now? What are you interested in?
I'm thinking a lot about personhood and just the way who I am and how that emerges on a moment-to-moment basis, and how that is constantly shifting and changing, even and the effort that it requires to keep a constancy as a thing that we're doing. So sort of like no longer taking it for granted that I am just who I am, and that there's like a certain level of like any stasis is something that you've got to hold on to, and the mutability is a good thing, but there's a balance that needs to be struck. So I don't know, it's a lot about that.
I love it. I'm speaking with Andrew Turner, who is set to present 18 practices at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine. More specifically, the show itself is about a book, a very long book, Homer's Odysseus, which I understand this is actually a story that you got into when you were really young, right?
I first read Alfred Church's The Odyssey for Boys and Girls, which was written like really, I think it was early 20th century, if not late 19th century. So very like sort of an unexamined canonical take on the figure of Odysseus, who, in what I was sort of digesting, is it made a very deep impression on my young mind of this very heroic figure who outsmarts everybody and who can shoot an arrow through 12 axe handles and is this sort of wayward adventurer pirate king, and he sort of seems like the coolest person. And it was, yeah, it's sort of like a big part of the sort of assumed masculine understructure of my, of who I was for a very long time. Yeah, so like came across Emily Wilson's newer version. She wrote this in 2017, a very sort of fresh take on the poem. The first by a woman classicist, like ever. There are like 60 translations. Wow. It's all men, every single one of them. And again, also very, very sort of, what is the word? Very celebratory up until now. Like, whereas her take is very subtly critical.
Right.
There's an element of critique to it. She hews very closely to the poem and to its meter, and but it's very plain spoken. Her language is purposely very quotidian, but she makes these subtle but very radical word choices. You know, like she'll call a rape, rather than servants. People are named as slaves, which, you know. So not pulling any punches on the sort of world building and the brutality of the world that Odysseus lives in and is a very much a part of. He's a very, very brutal character. He's an adulterer. He's a colonizer. He's an invader. He's a destroyer of cities. He's a murderer. And he's a liar. He's a big, big, he's always lying. And always concealing his identity, even to his wife, to his son. Like, he's just constantly hiding.
So Emily's version is quite a throws away from the Odysseus you grew up reading about as a child. Yeah. And so obviously it totally grabbed your imagination. How did you know that this book and this interpretation was something that, you know, could inspire a dance performance?
It sort of struck me reading this epic, like how much of it had sort of subconsciously lodged itself directly, you know, as a kid, but also like the tropes are present in film and literature everywhere. You know, the very idea of what it is to be on an adventurer, to be an adventurer, to be a man, to be a warrior, to, you know, to win. All of those things are influenced by this book. It's just one of the first two examples of literature in the Western tradition. Sort of looping back to this preoccupation around who I am and what's responsible for that. I became interested in sort of pulling that apart a little bit, trying to subtly just like take the pieces apart and look at them in the light of day and sort of see what comes up.
So you're is it like a contrast that you grew up with this one idea of Odysseus, you've read this other interpretation that has kind of thrown everything into question. And you're feeling that way too about your own identity. Like, what are the assumptions I've made about myself? But how is what is a different way to look at who I am and what I'm here for?
I mean, I don't want to go too deep into it because I don't think I have the theoretical baggage to talk about this in the way that I'd like to. But just being a man over the last 40 years, there's so many blind spots that are being lifted, thankfully.
Right.
And so many things that I have took for granted 2, 3, 5 years ago, I'm realizing that I'm learning through the work of other thinkers and my girlfriend and everybody I speak to. I don't know, there's this welcome shift in the way we think about things.
I'm speaking with Andrew Turner, who is the choreographer and performer of new solo work 18 Practices at La Chapelle Saint Contemporaine this February. Andrew, the 18 Practices actually literally does refer to 18 actions or things that you repeat over the course of the show. They're all drawn from Odysseus, this version by Emily Wilson. So for a layperson like myself, understanding dance, like, what are some of these movements? So they actually come from specific things and items that you've picked out from the book, right?
Okay, so like, say when I get into the studio with my sort of walking around talking body? What are the ways in which I get myself ready to be a dancing body? So sort of trying to foreground these practices that I have over the years put into place in order to just sort of be in touch with my body and with its sensations. And I used to think of dance as a mode of expression, as a way of expressing things. And, you know, as I've gotten older, I think of it more and more as dance and choreography as its own conceptually rigorous mode of thought. So that when you're dancing, you're actually thinking through things in a way that is different than when you're talking or writing. I don't know if you're familiar with the term of somatic practice.
So tell me about it.
It's a collection of different disciplines. So somatic, soma is the body as experienced from the inside. So getting in touch with sensation at a raw level. I've been trying to build this work out of some of these practices in order to get in touch with my sensations, whether that is paying specific attention to the very rich sensorial location of my tongue and trying to transfer that to the rest of my body so that my whole body becomes a tongue. It sounds super bizarre, but it's really, really trippy. Or else just other ways, you know, like lateralizing focus so that I no longer feel or sense myself as a central doer, but rather am reacting to a plurality of local movement impulses so that there's, in a sense, several voices acting on my body. So things like that.
Absolutely. The things that you're talking about in your body are so innate to you, right? And you have a language for it when you're working with your dramaturge. But then to actually put it into words could be quite another deal, right?
Like, yeah, a whole other thing. And then there's just other practices. They're almost like thumb twiddling. Like I'd be sitting alone in the studio and take up some kind of obsession or another that I just decided to push as far as I could. So I started spinning a broom in my house at one point, and that developed slowly into, I bought a couple of lightsabers and began teaching myself to spin lightsabers.
Like a Jedi?
Like a Jedi through YouTube tutorials. So, and then push that as far as I could so that I now am able to dual wield lightsabers. So that's
so cool.
Like speaking backwards. So I'm speaking to myself. I'm filming myself speaking phonetically backwards and then having a conversation with my backwards self, which is external, a version of exactly my inner critic. So he just talks shit to me backwards all day and we hash it out together. So yeah, just weird shit. Just
super trippy. I love
it. Weird shit. Yeah.
Speaking with Andrew Turner, the choreographer and performer of 18 Practices. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask about your career in the sense that you were academic tracked. You wanted to be a scholar like Emily Wilson, and then you switched to contemporary dance. Can you tell me about that briefly?
Yeah. I mean, this is going back 20 years. I was at McGill doing history and religious studies, and I dropped out because the lifestyle was hard. Wasn't sleeping much and I was drinking too much coffee. And I actually, my body's developing repetitive stress injuries. I got carpal tunnel and I dropped out in tears one day while I was trying to like heal. I got into dancing, going to dance classes and ended up at Concordia's contemporary dance program. They let me in, even though I had zero aptitude for dancing at the time. During my audition, they thought I had a problem with my eyes. They thought I was blind because I couldn't follow what was going on. And then, yeah, you know, since then, I got out of school and started working as a dancer and then started making my own work and just finished a master's degree at UCAM. Like now, combining the two.
Academics and dance.
Yeah.
You've come full circle.
Come full circle, exactly.
It's a circuitous route, but you must be looking back relieved, you know, that you made the choices that you did.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, dancing sort of opened up a whole layer of richness of experience that I didn't know existed when I was walking around in my head all the time. So it's great to sort of be in my body.
Well, I'm really excited that you finally get to put on the show after 3 months of gestation, 18 yeah. practices at La Chapelle Seine Contemporaine. Thank you so much for this thoughtful conversation, Andrew.
It's been a real pleasure, Sarah. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
That was Andrew Turner, choreographer and dancer. His new solo work is 18 Practices, presented now until Saturday at La Chapelle Seine Contemporaine. You can visit lachapelle.org, email bietri@lachapelle.org, or call 514-843-7738 for tickets and more information. I'm Sarah De A, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week.
If it appears that COVID-19 symptoms like cough, fever, sore throat, and loss of taste and smell are beginning to present themselves, you can begin to self-isolate and take a rapid test at home. After getting your test results, you can learn more about proper self-isolation guidelines by visiting quebec.ca/self-isolating. This information is there to help protect you and everyone living under the same roof. All of us can make a difference, so let's keep making sure all of us are safe. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
So we've covered this hour traditional theater as a radio play, dance inspired by the classics, and now we'll take a visit to Greenland. The Dome at the Sat, located on St. Laurent below St. Catherine, it's the place to go for immersive shows. You're ensconced in a cozy black beanbag chair. You look up at the dome as colorful, surreal images fly past you, and it's usually set to a thumping electronic score. The latest work to take over the dome is called minus 22.7 degrees Celsius, or moins 22.7 degrés. It's a creation of Molecule, a French DJ and music producer whose real name is Romain Delahaye. Molecule is known for pioneering nomadic electronic music, taking his gear on the road and recording natural sound in remote places for weeks at a time, his most recent visit being to a small Inuit town in Greenland, where he recorded wind, cracking ice, the crunch of snow. After recording, Molecule mixes the natural sound into a record, and it's all accompanied by stunning visuals by Belgian studio Dirty Monitor. The effect is beautiful and sometimes surreal. It will transport you. You get to see the Aurora Borealis, you get to see him around glaciers, and of course there's surreal elements that blend their way in as well. I spoke with Molecule last week from Evian, France, where he is completing a residency. A small note, this interview was done in French, so bear with me. This is my conversation with Molecule. Bienvenue Molecule, Romain à Upstage. Merci d'avoir pris le temps aujourd'hui.
C'est un plaisir, merci de l'invitation.
Parlez-moi de votre aventure à Greenland. C'est pas la première fois que vous êtes embarqué dans un voyage pour faire tourner un spectacle pour inspiration. Mais pourquoi choisir aller à Greenland ou Greenland?
J'ai développé depuis une dizaine d'années maintenant, un processus créatif qui consiste à aller m'immerger dans des lieux où la nature est dominante. Je suis parti en 2013 sur un chalutier au cœur de l'océan Atlantique pour mettre en musique la tempête. Ça a été une expérience assez fantastique, très forte. Je suis revenu les oreilles fatiguées parce que le volume était très puissant. Et en même temps, dès que j'ai remis le pied à terre, j'avais qu'une envie, c'était de repartir pour une nouvelle aventure. Et pour prendre le contre-pied de ce que je venais de vivre, j'ai voulu travailler autour du silence. Et par association d'idées, le silence m'a amené à l'hiver 2017 au Groenland, sur la côte est du Groenland, dans un petit village de chasseurs qui s'appelle Tinitekilak.
Comment vous avez choisi quel village ce serait le meilleur endroit pour faire un projet comme tel?
Alors, on choisit dans les grandes lignes et puis après, on fait en fonction des possibilités. Je suis tombé dans mes recherches sur une information comme la possibilité de louer une petite cabane dans ce village dans laquelle il y a l'électricité, qui est une cabane chauffée. Et donc, j'ai dit go. Je suis parti avec un vidéaste qui a documenté un peu tout ce processus créatif. Et je suis parti pendant plus de 5 semaines avec tous mes micros et mes instruments pour recréer entièrement un mini studio d'enregistrement dans ce village.
J'ai vu une photo de vous avec une kit, quelque chose avec une poignée. Est-ce que c'était ça comme votre petit comme studio portatif ou est-ce que ça, c'est juste une photo promotionnelle?
Oui, alors ça, c'est une photo un peu pour la presse. C'est un synthétiseur. Ça fait partie d'un des instruments que j'avais emmené. Moi, je travaille beaucoup avec des synthétiseurs analogiques, plutôt des années 70. Et voilà, j'avais amené à peu près 3-4 synthétiseurs, une table de mixage, des enceintes, des multi-effets, et puis beaucoup de micros. Voilà.
Être dans un espace qui est plus froid que normal, que de travailler dans un studio climatisé, par exemple. Est-ce qu'il y a des ajustements que vous avez besoin de faire pour garder tous les outils, tout l'équipement en bon état?
Oui, ben on doit s'adapter. L'idée que je mets aussi en avant dans ce type de projet, c'est de travailler autour de la contrainte. Je pars pour une période donnée où j'ai aucune idée préconçue de la musique qui va être composée et je m'impose de rajouter aucune note une fois revenu. Donc, tous les albums sont entièrement composés dans ces lieux-là. Il y a un morceau d'ailleurs dans cet album qui s'appelle Artifacts, qui a été fait à base d'enregistrement de tous les bugs et tous les dysfonctionnements de mes appareils liés notamment au grand froid.
Wow, donc même prendre des choses que d'autres compositeurs, tu sais, on effacera des petites erreurs, mais vous entreprenez pour l'incorporer et de les garder.
Oui, toute matière qui inspire et qui surtout traduit une facette de ce que je vis sur le moment, des contraintes, des conditions, des émotions, évidemment, je l'utilise et je le mets, ça me sert à composer ma musique, ouais.
J'imagine aussi qu'en tant que compositeur, il y a de la libération de faire le travail et de le laisser, de ne pas aller retourner puis faire des ajustements. Comme d'une façon, c'est la liberté, non?
Oui, c'est une forme de liberté. Aujourd'hui, à l'ère du numérique, on a des possibilités presque illimitées de revenir en arrière, de déconstruire, de reconstruire. Et j'aime cette idée de travailler autour de la contrainte. Et puis pour moi, terminer ces compositions une fois revenu dans mon confort ou mon studio parisien, ça n'aurait aucun sens puisque j'aime cette idée de délivrer un album et une musique brute qui transpire un peu les émotions et le vécu sur place.
Pendant que vous êtes dans In the Wild, dans l'espace choisi, que vous avez choisi, est-ce que ça commence déjà l'acte de composition? Est-ce que là, vous êtes en train de comme prendre le son du vent? Tu sais, par exemple, à Greenland, il y avait la neige et the crunch of the snow, la glace. Mais est-ce que ça commence à ce point-ci? Vous commencez à entendre la musique, les notes, comme ça, the music takes shape, un petit peu quand vous êtes là, ou est-ce que ça vient après l'enregistrement?
Tout à fait, ça vient sur le moment. Ces moments d'enregistrement sont des moments très importants parce que c'est des moments où on se connecte vraiment à l'extérieur, à travers l'écoute. Hein. L'enregistrement, c'est aussi l'art d'écouter, et l'écoute est un sens très puissant qui permet de mettre en résonance ce qu'on a de plus intime, de plus intérieur et avec l'immensité des décors dans lesquels on se trouve. Le plus gros de mon travail avant de partir, c'est d'essayer de ne rien anticiper et de ne pas devancer l'inspiration, de vraiment arriver et de se prendre en pleine figure cet environnement inconnu pour le traduire sur place en musique. Et puis, ces enregistrements me permettent, quand je dérush, je les édite, je les sculpte et les notes de musique viennent se poser petit à petit sur ces enregistrements.
Avant de commencer à enregistrer, puis l'art d'écouter, est-ce que vous inspirez pour quelques instants? Qu'est-ce que vous faites comme physiquement avec le corps et le cerveau avant que vous commencez à enregistrer pour écouter à 100%?
Déjà, quand on enregistre, il faut faire aucun bruit. Donc, c'est un peu l'art de disparaître. Effectivement, de se mettre dans un état proche de la méditation, de retenir son souffle, au maximum de participer, de ne faire qu'un avec le cadre dans lequel on se trouve et être attentif aux moindres détails. Travailler autour du silence, c'est aussi s'attacher aux détails et aux moindres sons qui peut apparaître, d'essayer de les identifier, d'essayer de trouver leur origine. Donc c'est une démarche effectivement qui s'approche de la méditation. Et l'art de la composition, selon moi, c'est aussi d'arriver à se mettre dans un état où on est finalement juste passeur entre l'inspiration, un lieu et la musique qu'on compose. Et il faut arriver à que ce soit le plus souple, le plus naturel possible. Dès que ça devient un peu source de travail, de trop de réflexion, je pense qu'on perd l'inspiration pure. Donc c'est un état qui est pas facile à trouver, mais l'idée, c'est de créer les conditions de cet état-là.
Je suis en conversation avec l'artiste Molécule, Romain, qui est présentement en France. Moi, je suis ici à Montréal à lui parler. En pensant au nord, le climat arctique, ça nous fait penser au réchauffement de la planète parce que les changements sont vraiment évidents avec la glace qui fond, par exemple. Est-ce que l'idée de le changement climatique les concerne pour l'environnement? Est-ce que ça, c'était du tout une partie de vos recherches ou vos pensées?
Dans mon travail, en allant à chaque fois dans des endroits où la nature s'exprime pleinement, où elle est dominante, il y a effectivement, je dirais que ça véhicule beaucoup de valeurs et des points de vue idéologiques. Après, le thème du réchauffement climatique, il est abordé très concrètement dans le titre de l'album, qui est donc -22°C. Mais je dirais que c'est le seul moment véritablement où je l'aborde très concrètement. -22°C, c'est la température la plus basse que j'ai rencontrée en plein hiver au Groenland. C'est, je crois, une température que vous avez à peu près tous les week-ends chez vous à Montréal. On a pitché la première fois derrière le projet au Québec, les gens en rigolaient un peu en disant « mais attendez, c'est rien du tout ». Et je leur ai expliqué que mais oui, c'est effectivement, c'est rien du tout. Ce n'est pas un titre pour montrer comme je suis fort et que j'ai bravé des températures négatives. C'est au contraire un titre qui évoque le réchauffement climatique et qui montre que aujourd'hui, même dans le Grand Nord comme ça, il fait plus si froid que ça. Et puis, j'ai tendance à dire aussi qu'au Groenland, le réchauffement climatique se voit plus qu'ailleurs et qu'il s'entend même. Et on l'entend dans cet album.
Ouais. J'imagine que la réaction, à cause du titre du projet, la réaction est différente pour comme les Français ou les Européens qu'avec les Québécois et les Canadiens. Donc, on est vraiment habitué à voir les températures comme ça, c'est normal. Mais pour des autres personnes dans des endroits plus chauds, c'est un peu... ça connote un extrême, que c'est extrême.
Oui, tout à fait. les températures sont relatives, mais bon, ça reste... J'ai des souvenirs de ski dans les Alpes en France où on a ce genre de température en haut des pistes. Hein, donc, c'est pas complètement fou. Aujourd'hui, les températures les plus basses, c'est en Antarctique où on va vers du -70°. C'est là, on est dans quelque chose de très convenable, finalement.
Étant comme une pionnière de l'art de vous créer la musique électronique en voyage comme vous, vous avez déjà fait le travail comme tel sur un bateau dans l'Atlantique, maintenant le Groenland. Ça serait quoi la prochaine cible?
J'ai travaillé depuis, j'ai fait un projet à Nazaré au Portugal sur la plus grosse vague du monde, un projet en collaboration avec des surfeurs professionnels. Et puis dernièrement, j'ai fait un projet sur le Vendée Globe, une course en solitaire et sans escale autour du monde où j'ai installé tout un dispositif de micro et de caméra sur ce bateau. Et je suis en train de terminer le film en ce moment. Donc voilà, il y a eu d'autres projets. Il y a évidemment plein d'idées. Peut-être aller dans des endroits où il fait un peu plus chaud. voilà, j'ai coutume de ne pas trop m'avancer sur les projets en route parce que c'est souvent des projets fragiles qui sont difficiles à mettre en place, mais ce n'est pas les idées qui manquent. Ouais.
J'imagine que vous êtes quelqu'un qui aime être dans la solitude pour des projets comme ça où vous avez besoin d'avoir la concentration, écouter les oreilles ouvertes. Est-ce que c'est quelque chose que vous cherchez dans ta vie quotidienne, d'avoir le silence et le temps de faire la réflexion?
J'aime les deux. Je ne suis pas un grand solitaire. J'ai besoin d'être entouré. J'aime beaucoup la vie en communauté, la chaleur humaine, la fête. Mais c'est vrai que les moments de solitude comme ça sont des moments importants que je chéris tout particulièrement. Mais il ne faut pas que ça soit une solitude trop profonde non plus. Voilà. Donc c'est un équilibre. On me pose aussi souvent la question de savoir si c'est une fuite. C'est pas une fuite. Moi, j'habite actuellement à Paris, dans une grande ville, et j'aime aussi la vie urbaine, citadine. Voilà, c'est un équilibre de partir. C'est des échappées, partir pour mieux revenir. Voilà, c'est un tout.
Un séjour de 3-4 jours ou 5 semaines à peu près, c'est un bon montant de temps.
Oui, 5 semaines, ça commence à être une belle aventure. Partir plus longtemps, je ne sais pas si j'en serais capable. C'est à chaque fois des moments très forts au niveau émotionnel. On met du temps à s'en remettre, et puis ça demande aussi de la préparation. Je fais ça à peu près tous les 2-3 ans, puisqu'après, il y a les sorties d'albums, les tournées. Faut trouver le bon équilibre dans tout ça.
Et en parlant des tournées, c'est dommage, mais à cause de la cinquième vague, on a raté la chance de vous accueillir à Montréal. Vous étiez supposé d'être là en janvier pour Igloo Fest, c'est bien ça?
Oui, l'Igloo Fest, et puis surtout la première de l'expérience Dôme à la SAT. Malheureusement, ça s'est décalé une fois de plus, mais je suis déjà très heureux que le public montréalais ait pu découvrir cette œuvre qui est un projet pour moi très particulier. Et je suis heureux de cette collaboration avec aussi une communauté forte à Montréal en termes de production, les équipes de la SAT. Et j'espère avoir l'occasion de pouvoir vivre cette expérience, puisque ce que vous avez vu mardi dernier, je n'ai toujours pas expérimenté, moi, de mes propres yeux. Voilà, j'ai beaucoup travaillé sur ce projet en studio, mais j'aimerais bien le voir en grandeur nature. pour bientôt, j'espère.
J'espère aussi. Je dois dire que maintenant que les théâtres, l'espace comme le SAT ont la permission de réouvrir dès cette semaine. Donc, pour moi, c'était la première expérience en salle depuis décembre. Donc, je pense que pour beaucoup de gens, ça va être une expérience très, très spéciale ce mois-ci. En plus, oui, c'est encore hiver. Donc, on va retourner pour être dans un espace hiver, mais je pense que c'est comme l'expérience était fantastique. Donc, je vous remercie beaucoup de m'avoir parlé aujourd'hui, mais aussi pour la création de moins 22 degrés. J'apprécie beaucoup.
Ben merci. Hein. Et je crois que c'est encore à l'affiche jusqu'au 26 février à la SAT de Montréal.
C'est bien ça. Merci beaucoup, Romain. Bonne journée.
Merci. À bientôt.
That was Molecule, a.k.a. Romain de la Haye, French music producer and DJ. His latest work is an immersive show on now at the SAT called -22.7 degrees Celsius. You can catch it until February 26th. Visit sat.qc.ca, that's spelled S-A-T, or call 514-844-2033, post 210 to reserve your spot. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca every week, bringing you stories from the theater and art scene in Montreal. Tonight you heard actress and writer Julie Vincent, author of The Doorman of Windsor Station, now adapted into a radio play. You can check that out at Singulier Pluriel Facebook page online. And dancer choreographer Andrew Turner on his new show 18 Practices. It's now on at La Chapelle Saint Contemporaine. And of course, French music producer Molecule and his adventure to record the sounds of Greenland on now at the SAT. A very big thank you to my guests this evening. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Speak with you next time.
time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun, stay safe. Up next is Gray Matters.
Of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
And welcome to the February 17th edition of Gray Matters. Tonight on Alternative Radio, we have a lecture entitled Dismantling the System. It was recorded in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on June 8th, 2020. The lecturers tonight are Mark Lamont Hill and Kianga Yamata Taylor. Mark Lamont Hill is a professor of media studies and urban education at Temple University in Philadelphia. Ebony has named him one of America's 100 most influential black leaders. He is the author of Nobody, Casualties of America's War on the Vulnerable, From Ferguson to Flint and Beyond. And Kianga Yamata Taylor writes and speaks on black politics, social movements, and racial inequality. She's professor of African American Studies at Princeton. Her articles have appeared in The New Yorker, The Nation, The Guardian, and Jacobin. She is the author of Race for Profit, How We Get Free, and the award-winning From Hashtag Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation. So, without further ado, here's tonight's lecture on Gray Matters, Dismantling the System.